It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including data centers dominate East Valley industrial growth. Time to start thinking about the 50th annual Easter parade. Ahwatukee Lacrosse invites new members. Two couples credit Ahwatukee community support for success. Lawmakers ponder drones to create snow. And Governor Hobbs unveils her 2027 spending plan. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Data centers dominate East Valley industrial growth by Paul Mariniak. Data center development has become the dominant force in the East Valley's industrial real estate market, anchoring it as Metro Phoenix's most active industrial corridor, even as the broader market appears to be stabilizing, according to a new fourth quarter report. Savills reported that data centers alone accounted for 6.4 million square feet, representing more than one-third of all industrial construction underway across the valley in the fourth quarter of 2025. Large-scale projects position Southeast Valley at the center of the valley's industrial pipeline, driven by access to land, power infrastructure, and major transportation routes, including Loop 202 and Interstate 10. Two of the valley's biggest developments under construction last quarter were data centers in East Mesa, a 250,000-square-foot Google facility, and a 235,000-square-foot NYT Data Center Corp. building, according to the report. Dwarfing those two was Aligned Energy's 445,000-square-foot data center on North Reams Road in Northwest Phoenix. Elevated yet stable vacancy alongside flat rent growth may indicate the market is nearing an inflection point, Savills said. It noted that data center development continues to provide a stabilizing demand base even as traditional warehouse growth slows. Metro Phoenix recorded 2.2 million square feet of positive net absorption in the fourth quarter, bringing total absorption for 2025 to 15.2 million square feet, slightly higher than 2024. Net absorption reflects the net gain of occupied industrial space after accounting for tenant move-outs and demolitions and is widely viewed as a measure of underlying demand. While traditional logistics and distribution leasing has moderated, Savills noted that demand tied to data center construction equipment and long-term operations has helped sustain absorption. Savills attributed much of the Southeast Valley's resilience to the expanded data center ecosystem, which includes not only large facilities, but also manufacturers and suppliers serving the sector. For example, among the valley's five largest industrial leases signed during the quarter involved Kovach Enclosure Systems, which Savills said provides critical infrastructure for data center operations. In October, Kovach Enclosure Systems signed a 15-year lease for 190,475-square-foot facility at the Chandler Freeways Business Park at 6955 West Morelos Place in Chandler. Industrial rent growth across Metro Phoenix slowed significantly in 2025, reflecting the volume of new space delivered to the market, Savills said. Average asking rents ended the year at 84 cents per square foot per month, representing 1.2% annual growth, according to the report. Rental rates in the Southeast Valley remained below those in the Northeast Valley, which posted the region's highest average asking rents. Savills said the difference reflects the Southeast Valley's role as the metro area's primary development hub. The overall Metro Phoenix industrial vacancy rate stood at 15.3% at the end of the year. Savills said vacancy levels in Chandler, Gilbert, and Queen Creek reflect a combination of ongoing construction deliveries and tenant demand that is increasingly specialized rather than broad-based. Developers delivered 19.7 million square feet of industrial space during 2025, down from the prior year as new groundbreakings slowed. At year's end, 18 million square feet remained under construction, signaling a more disciplined pipeline heading into 2026. Savills said the Southeast Valley's infrastructure advantages, including available power capacity, Land suitable for campus-style development and proximity to skilled labor continue to attract data center investment despite a cooling industrial market overall. While the report cautioned that elevated vacancy and flat rent growth may persist in the near term, it said, data center-driven growth will remain a key demand catalyst in the leasing and development sectors. That was, data centers dominate East Valley industrial growth. Our next article, Time to Start Thinking About the 50th Annual Easter Parade by AFN staff. Easter is early this year, and that means the time for people and groups who want to march in a milestone Kiwanis Ahwatukee Easter Parade have a tad less time to get their applications in and then work on their parade entry. It's a milestone because the parade will hit the half-century mark when it steps off at 10 a.m. April 4th from the intersection of Warner Road and 48th Street and heads north to Cheyenne Drive. Parade boss Mike Schmidt, who has overseen the parade for the last 33 years, is pretty generous with the application deadline, March 26th, just 7 days before the parade. But the application is still needed from the high school bands and clubs, businesses, youth and church groups, families, and individuals eyeing a spot in the parade. Twice voted Ahwatukee Foothills Best Community Event, the Kiwanis Club of Ahwatukee picked up the baton for continuing the parade after the founder Ahwatukee JC Club folded in 2000. Even with the draconian ban on public gatherings was in effect during the COVID-19 pandemic, some stalwart Kiwanians decorated their vehicles and rolled up 48th Street to keep alive Ahwatukee's oldest community tradition. Spectators are always welcome to bring lawn chairs or spread blankets and enjoy the parade. Public address stations will be located at Ahwatukee Country Club and at the corners of Ahwatukee Drive, Kiowa Street, and Pawnee Street. After the parade, people are invited to the Spring Festival at Ahwatukee Community Center Park at 48th Street and Warner Road. Headed by Andy Pettyjohn, another longtime Kiwanian, for the 24th time, the festival features entertainment by local groups, vendor and craft booths, continuous Easter egg hunts, bounce houses, games, food, beverages, and family games from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Parade entry forms have been mailed to over 300 local businesses, groups, and previous parade entries. Easter parade and festival forms are available at ahwatukeekiwanis.org. That was Time to Start Thinking About the 50th Annual Easter Parade. Our next article, Ahwatukee Lacrosse Invites New Members, also by AFN staff. As the spring season gets underway, Ahwatukee Lightning Ladies Lacrosse is celebrating a milestone year and inviting more girls to join the field. Now entering its 10th season, the community-based program was formed in 2016 by Ahwatukee parents who wanted to create a supportive space for girls to learn the game, build confidence, and compete together. A decade later, the club continues to grow, offering opportunities for players of all experience levels, from first-timers to returning athletes. Our program represents the kind of positive, community-driven youth sports story that resonates here in Ahwatukee, said Eric Raskin, the club's incoming president, who is stepping into the role as the spring 2026 season begins. The support we receive from families, local businesses, and neighbors is something truly special, and we always welcome new players to join our Lightning family regardless of experience level, he said. The club was founded by Ahwatukee residents Holly Ophart, Pete Ophart, Christine Piazza, and Rachel Adamic, all of whom remain connected to the program today. In a full circle moment, some founders now have daughters who coach within the organization. Since its start, the Lightning has emphasized more than wins and losses. Players focus on teamwork, leadership, and personal growth, forming friendships that extend beyond the field. I see firsthand how being a part of this program boosts self-confidence, encourages positive communication, and helps girls believe in themselves both on and off the field. It's about growth as people, not just players, said Raskin, who has been working with the group for 5 years. The exposure gives young athletes a chance to learn from experienced collegiate players while seeing what's possible through commitment and hard work. On weekends, Lightning teams compete throughout the Valley and beyond, facing opponents from the North Valley to Tucson. Raskin said the schedule brings a mix of competition and camaraderie. The weekends are full of teamwork, growth, and plenty of smiles, he said. The girls truly have a blast being active, learning together, and challenging themselves. Ahwatukee Lightning Ladies Lacrosse is open to girls from kindergarten through middle school and has grown into a close, supportive family that continues to expand each season, Raskin said. The spring 2026 season is now underway. Practices are held at Akamel Al-Al Middle School from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Mondays and Wednesdays, with games Saturday mornings. The first game of the season is scheduled for February 7th at Mesquite High School. The club welcomes all girls interested in lacrosse regardless of experience. No experience is necessary, just a willingness to learn and have fun, Raskin said. Girls need a lacrosse stick, lacrosse goggles, and a mouth guard, and if they don't have them immediately, the club has extra sticks and goggles on hand for any player. For more information, go to AhwatukeeLightningLadiesLacrosse.com. That was Ahwatukee Lacrosse Invites New Members. Our next article, two couples credit Ahwatukee community support for success, also by AFN staff. Several Ahwatukee-based service businesses are making milestones this year as their owners expand operations while remaining rooted in the local community. Thomas and Erica Howard, owners of Valley Pro Power Wash, are entering their sixth year providing power washing and window cleaning services to residential and commercial customers in Ahwatukee and throughout Phoenix. They have been serving local Ahwatukee businesses like Zeke's Pizza, Dairy Queen, and hundreds of residential properties, spokesman Jeremiah Green said. If they're not on the mountain or washing, you can find them having a drink at Ahwatukee local favorite spot, the Buzzed Goat, he added. The Howards live in the Ahwatukee Foothills area and are active in the community. Their growth has paralleled that of friends Keith and Aaron Call, owners of South Mountain Auto Detail and Holiday Lights Phoenix. The Calls provide mobile detailing and paint protection, while their lights business offer both seasonal and permanent holiday lights for homes and businesses. As their businesses expanded, the two couples acquired a shared commercial office space, allowing them to operate more efficiently while continuing to grow. Keith transitioned to full-time business ownership in 2020 after leaving his position as general manager at Ted's Hot Dogs in Tempe. The move marked a turning point as both companies increased capacity and visibility in Ahwatukee and beyond, said Green, who is Thomas's brother and manages the couple's website. The businesses trace their entrepreneurial roots to Green, former owner of South Mountain Window Cleaning, whose own business inspired them. Green later sold the company and relocated to Illinois, where he launched another window washing business. All three business owners said they focus on customer service and hands-on work, an approach that has contributed to recognition from the community. Over the years, their companies have received multiple Best of Ahwatukee honors in their respective categories. They credit sustained local support for their ability to grow and collaborate, emphasizing that community relationships have played a central role in turning small service operations into long-term businesses. For information, go to southmountainautodetail.com or valleypowerwash.com. That was two couples credit Ahwatukee community support for success. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Lawmakers ponder drones to create snow, by Bob Christie. Drought-plagued Arizona could see state-funded drones spraying microscopic silver iodide particles into mountain clouds to boost snowfall if proponents get their way. The legislature is considering the use of money earmarked for boosting rural water supplies to pay for so-called cloud seeding operations to increase precipitation in the state's high country. But the proposal, sponsored by Representative Gail Griffin, Republican from Hereford, may have a tough road ahead. That's because even some majority Republicans on the committee that heard her proposal expressed concern about the safety and efficacy of cloud seeding. It passed Griffin's committee on January 13th with a bare majority. And some Republicans have been pushing bills in recent sessions that would ban any weather modification efforts, although they're mainly focused on theoretical proposals to lower global temperatures by partially blocking sunlight. One bill introduced this year would specifically ban releasing any chemical into the atmosphere with the intent of affecting temperatures, climate, weather, or sunlight intensity. But Senator John Kavanaugh, Republican from Scottsdale, told Capital Media Services that he plans to amend his proposal to exempt cloud seeding under current state licensing rules. Cloud seeding involves spraying microscopic particles, usually silver iodide, into clouds to boost rain or snowfall. Arizona law requires any effort to modify the weather or artificially increase rainfall to be licensed by the Arizona Department of Water Resources. The new proposal, HB 2024, would allow the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority to tap one of its funds to pay for cloud seeding by reclassifying snowpack augmentation as a qualifying water supply development project. The agency has a long-standing mission of financing and backing new rural water supplies, funding drinking water supply and wastewater infrastructure projects, and backing conservation efforts across the state. Griffin focuses on water legislation as chair of the House Natural Resources, Energy, and Water Committee. She called cloud seeding another tool in the toolbox for boosting Arizona's water supply. Backing the effort is an El Segundo, California startup company called Rainmaker Technologies Corp., which is already doing cloud seeding operations in Utah and Idaho with funding from those states. The company is using drones and ground-based generators to inject silver iodide particles into clouds when conditions are ripe. Under the decades-old technology, the particles help ice crystals form and can increase rainfall or snowfall. Sean Martini, who handles the company's government affairs, testified that the company operates in 7 states. At Rainmaker, we spend a lot of time thinking about water and how the conservation and mindset is always one of the scarcity and doing less with less, he told the committee. And hopefully, with the application of this technology, we can shift the conversation and the mindset from one of scarcity to one of abundance, and at a minimum, additionally. If the legislation is approved and signed by Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs, Rainmaker Technologies won't be able to tap into the funds unless it partners with a water provider, as defined by WIFA, agency spokesman Ben Altenader said. Martini said in an interview that his company does not yet have an agreement with a water provider for any snowmaking operations. Judah Waxelbaum, chief of government affairs for WIFA, told Griffin's committee that the changes her bill makes would allow a water provider to tap into the Water Supply Development Revolving Fund, which funds projects outside of the Phoenix, Tucson, and Pinal County areas. The legislature appropriated $200 million for the long-dormant fund in 2022 when it also remade the agency's mission into one that also seeks new, out-of-state water supplies. WIFA's board has approved spending $85 million of that so far. The proposal approved by Griffin's committee only advanced because one Republican committee member who was concerned about manipulating the weather changed her vote to yes at the last minute. Representative Pamela Carter, Republican from Scottsdale, initially voted against the measure, but then changed the vote and allowed it to advance to the full House, reserving her right to change her vote again. All 4 Democrats on the 10-member House committee opposed the measure. All 9 Western states currently do cloud seeding, according to the North American Weather Modification Council, which helps coordinate the efforts. Arizona currently has no active cloud seeding operations, although the Pinal County Water Augmentation Authority ran a test last summer where an airplane sprayed silver iodide crystals into clouds. The Salt River Project also participated in a cloud seeding climatology study several years ago, although no actual cloud seeding was done. SRP hasn't discussed doing actual cloud seeding, spokesperson Elena Steingard said in an email. The water and power provider is first working to determine if it would be worthwhile. The Central Arizona Project, which runs the canal that feeds Colorado River water to Phoenix and Tucson, currently helps fund cloud seeding operations in Wyoming, Colorado, and Utah. Also participating in that operation are Nevada, California water agencies. In Pinal County last year, aircraft conducted 30 flights between July and September to determine if cloud seeding could boost summer monsoon rains, with the meteorologist using radar data to determine target dates and locations. The final report prepared by the meteorologist who oversaw the project called it a good start and a success. Clouds seeded yield an increase of 0.47 inches across the target area, resulting in 134,192 acre-feet of water production, meteorologist Bria DiCarlo wrote in the report. DiCarlo is identified as a state-licensed meteorologist with the Texas Weather Modification Association, and she also works for Rainmaker Technologies. Weather modification is often used in place of the term cloud seeding. Whether cloud seeding is actually effective is not certain, as a 2024 report from the Government Accountability Office found. States are split over whether to embrace it, with 9 currently using it, while 10 others have either banned it or have considered banning cloud seeding or weather modification in general. The GAO report said scientific studies are limited and show a broad range of results, with increases in precipitation ranging from 0 to 20%. The studies it reviewed on the use of silver iodide show it doesn't pose environmental or health concern at current levels, but it isn't known if more widespread use could have negative effects. Testifying against Griffin's bill was Sandy Barr, director of the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter. "There's a lot of uncertainty associated with it," Barr said. "Cloud seeding has shown itself to be quite inconsistent. There are also a lot of unintended consequences associated with cloud seeding." Representative James Taylor noted that the Environmental Protection Agency regulates and limits the use of silver iodide, and businesses like Rainmaker Technologies stay within those limits. Representative Ralph Heap, Republican from Mesa, said he was encouraged that Rainmaker's use of drones could reap better benefits, and he's not concerned about the use of silver iodide. But he too said he needs to do more research before the whole House takes up the measure. Democratic Representative May Pishalkai, a member of the Navajo Nation from Cameron, said she's wary of artificial cloud seeding. "I'm really quite confused about artificially producing any type of moisture with these kinds of chemicals," Pishalkai said while explaining her no vote. "But just to let you know, I trust the traditional rain dance more than I would this type of thing." That was "Lawmakers Ponder Drones to Create Snow." And finally, Governor Hobbs unveils her 2027 spending plan, by Bob Christie and Howard Fisher. Governor Katie Hobbs rolled out her fourth executive budget proposal Friday with a spending plan that focused on bread and butter affordability issues she believes are critical for helping Arizonans and to help the Democrat to win a second term. But the $18.7 billion spending plan relies on political sleight of hand and some good luck to be balanced, including leaning on President Donald Trump's administration to dole out nearly $760 million to reimburse the state for money it has spent on border security since 2021. She also relies on the Republican-controlled legislature to raise taxes, something they are politically opposed to, and to cut spending on the universal school voucher program that GOP lawmakers consider sacrosanct to make the math work. The fee increases include a $146 million boost on levies on sports betting legalized in 2021 and currently taxed at 10% of profits, as well as ending $38 million in yearly tax breaks handed out to new or expanding data centers. Together, the border reimbursements fee increases and voucher cuts add up to nearly $985 million, about 5.5% of the state budget. Not to worry, Hobbs spokesman Christian Slater said, at least on the border security money. He said Trump has made clear that he's all in on border security as a top priority, and Hobbs and former Governor Doug Ducey spent that money securing the border. And with Trump's one big beautiful bill, including $13 billion for border states that's spent on border security, he expects Arizona to get its share. We have bipartisan agreement among our Republican state legislatures, Governor Hobbs, Democratic state legislators, that is going to be something that we fight for, Slater said. And we feel very confident that we're going to be able to get that money. It may take some time. The Department of Homeland Security is charged with distributing the money to border states and has yet to come up with application rules, and Texas alone is asking for $11 billion of that. The cuts to school vouchers Hobbs wants to eliminate eligibility for the so-called empowerment scholarship accounts for those earning $250,000 or more are unlikely to come to pass. That move has $89 million in savings attached. And then there are the proposals to boost taxes on the profits of firms that conduct sports betting from 10% to 45%, and that will need at least some Republican support to become law. Tax increases generally require a two-thirds vote, but Slater said the government's office believes the law legalizing sports betting allows changes with just a majority vote. Even that, however, would need some Republican support because they hold majorities in both the House and the Senate. That was Governor Hobbs unveils her 2027 spending plan. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.